Good morning and welcome to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore. Your host is Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and this is a program. This morning it's going to take a look at a lot of municipal candidates all around the North Shore. Hello.
Hello there.
What's up?
Well, we have seven people we're going to talk to, starting with Paul Lundberg, city councilor at large in Gloucester, Dave Manzies, candidate for mayor in Beverly, Maria Carrasco, candidate for school committee in Lynn, Safathia Romeo Mayor of Gloucester, Estelle Rand, Ward 2 in Beverly, Randy Carpenter, School Committee in Peabody, and Domingo Dominguez, Council at Large in Salem.
All right, we got the whole North Shore covered today. All right, we'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. One of the ways to judge a company is in its staying power. At Moynihan Lumber, we've been doing our thing now for 55 years. Serving all of Greater Boston, Moynihan Lumber offers lumber and building materials, doors and windows, decking, kitchen cabinets, and Ace Hardware. Visit Moynihan Lumber at any of our three locations, in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Hi, this is Jeff Klickstein, General Manager at Moore GMC in Danvers. Did you know that we're a family-owned and operated dealer that's been serving the North Shore since 1969? When you come to see us, you're treated like part of our family. GMC has a great lineup with Sierra pickups, the ever-popular Acadia, and the redesigned 2016 Terrain. We are the dealer that will provide you with the best buying experience possible. We are conveniently located off Route 128 at Exit 23, 80 High Street in Danvers. I personally invite all of you to come in, come visit us, see why our customers keep coming back for all their automotive needs.
People come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street, a great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite, eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Sylvan Street Grill has a great new game time menu featuring delicious new dishes, specials, and all-time favorites, too.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Bradford Tavern, the Rowley Destination Restaurant, featuring many modern touches, nestled in a rustic setting, offering the finest steaks, seafood, and many quality daily specials. The Bradford Tavern is open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to midnight, serving lunch and dinner. See you soon at the Bradford Tavern in Rowley, 89 Haverhill Street, Route 133. And check us out at BradfordTavern.com.
Hello, sports fans. This is Wally, the voice of Honeydew Donuts. All right, you're getting ready to go to a game. I don't care if it's morning, afternoon, or night. Don't forget, stop into Honeydew Donuts and get yourself a cup of coffee. How about that large iced coffee? That Mocha Madness one is unbelievable. You'll think you went to Honeydew Heaven. So remember, you heard it here first on MSONewsSports.com. And remember the name. It's Honeydew Donuts, the only way to go.
Welcome back to our program, Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and our first guest is incumbent city councilor at large, Paul Lundberg. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Josh. I'm glad to be here, and thanks for the opportunity.
Well, great. Tell us, the listening audience, a little bit about yourself, education, background, and why you're seeking re-election at this time.
Sure. I'm a hometown native of Gloucester, Massachusetts, a graduate of Gloucester High School, class of 1969. I went to... got my bachelor's and master's in business degree at Northwestern University in Chicago and spent most of my career in the railroad industry in operations management. And included in that time was a year as the head of commuter rail here in Boston. My previous civic involvement with Gloucester was on the planning board. I was 6 years on the planning board and 2 years as chairman. Which got me interested in city politics and how the city works and how we can make it better for the citizens. And so when I had the opportunity 2 years ago to stand for election to the city council, I took that opportunity and was fortunate to have the voters send me to the council. And I'm seeking re-election because I think we've done good work on the council and there's plenty more to do.
Great. What do you think are the most important issues in the campaign in Gloucester this year?
I think the number one issue, Josh, is funding for the Gloucester Public Schools. The Gloucester Public Schools are the linchpin for so much of what happens in our town. As you know, and you know, back when I graduated from Gloucester High School, and even today, a lot of our graduates, for them, that's the end of their educational career, and we have to prepare them for being ready for work and for life. And so, I think it's a solemn responsibility we have as a city to make sure that they are a center of excellence. So the city council's role in that, I mean, that's the job of the school committee, but the city council's role in that is to try and make sure we balance all of the funding requirements of the city with that goal of school excellence, and I think that's probably the key issue in my mind.
What do you think of the Fuller property, from your standpoint? What are the key issues involved there?
Well, you know, the Fuller property was never part of our plan. That was built by the Archdiocese a long time ago for the boys' high school. After that endeavor did not work out, it became the Gloucester got a hold of it, tried to make it work as a school, but a boys' high school just did not fit for an elementary school or a middle school. Now we have an opportunity to maximize the value of that asset. We've put it on the open market. The RFP has been approved by the city council and is out in the marketplace. I think there's a lot of opportunity for development there, and we're going to be guided by, you know, what comes in from the RFP. Most of us on the council believe that we are not bound by what comes in. If the proposals that come in don't suit the city's needs, then we can rethink it. But I think we're taking the right steps and allowing the marketplace to give us their impressions of the value is the right next step.
How important is the parcel of land known as I-4C-2 to be put back in generating property tax?
Well, you know, that is a truly unique property. I mean, the Fuller School is unique, but I-4C-2 is truly unique, being right there on the harbor. The efforts that we have made as a city to evaluate what use it could be made have not been very good in my mind, and we need to really get serious about how we figure out how we can make that parcel valuable. You know, with any asset like that, Josh, it's returning property to the city tax rolls that is really a very high goal. We have a high tax burden, and the more we can get commercial enterprises to contribute to our tax burden, the better it is for the citizens. So I think we really need to get working on that, too.
That ends up being a tax relief to residential because you're expanding the tax base, distributing that across more business and industries, correct?
Exactly, exactly.
Right.
And I think that's really the key because we just can't keep raising the taxes on the residents. And I think that, again, we have a unique asset here. The whole city of Gloucester is a unique asset. And, as is shown by the development of the hotel and the fort, there are ways to improve the tax base on the commercial side that is going to benefit the residential side.
Given that students who attend the regional vocational school have a per pupil cost in excess of $23,500 and a child going to Gloucester High School, the cost per child is about a little over $13,000, what steps can a city council take to try to rein in the expensive cost of vocational education?
Right. Well, I think, you know, both of those entities, both Gloucester High School and the regional Voc School, are very important opportunities for our students. I mean, we really need to have vocational opportunity. College is not for everyone, and those two institutions provide a very valuable service. Regarding the cost per pupil, that's something I'm not particularly, astute on, other than there is a disparity, and I think that we ought to look in on that. I know we have a school committee member who is on both the Gloucester School Committee and the committee for the regional Voc, and I think that there needs to be some, she could help us understand what's going on there and why.
Great. As a city councilor, just as a follow-up, would you favor the council seeing a line item budget from the vocational school? I know every year you have to approve the expenditures that go to the regional vocational school. Is that something that you think would be helpful?
I don't think it would be helpful. I think that's the purview of the school committee, the line item budget responsibility, both for the Gloucester schools and the regional Voc school, and I think that's why we elect them, and they're the ones who should be accountable for that. The Gloucester City Council is just not in a position to be expert on those issues, and it would be a real burden to try and make us expert on it.
How has social media impacted local campaigns, and in what ways, if any, have you used social media as a campaign tactic or strategy?
Well, I should be asking you that question because you're probably a lot more savvy about it than I am. I know that it's important, and I, you know, have a website and encourage people to go there. It has information about me. I don't participate in the Facebook exchanges and that sort of thing. It's just not something that I've gotten up to do. I still believe in the approach of going to see the voters. I do an extensive door-to-door campaign, knocking on doors, handing out my literature. And for me, that's the most satisfying way of communicating with the voters, and I think it worked because that's how I won last time.
Who were the best two mayors Gloucester's had over the last 25 years, and what did they do that impressed you the most?
Well, I'm sorry you limited to 25 years, because when I was a very young lad, Beatrice Corliss was the mayor of Gloucester, and I grew up, you know, in my formative years, knowing that we had a woman mayor, and that was pretty cool. That was very different from, you know, the model at the time in the
sure.
late 50s, early 60s. But since then, the last 25 years, I think that John Bell got us through some really tough times. It wasn't pretty. And Carolyn Kirk managed to stabilize the ship and improve our city finances, and so I give them both a lot of credit.
Great. Last question before we get to go to our next guest. Parking on Atlantic Road for beaches. I know it's an ordinance. Proposals come forward in this term. Do you have a? Can you weigh in on that?
Yeah, I think we ought to leave it the way it is.
Yeah.
I think there's a host of issues involving safety and the neighbors and the kind of traffic that we have in the summertime. And right now, I think it's one thing that the city council has not done a good job as to really studying that and seeing how we could change it. So I'm not in favor of changing it right now.
Nautilus Road is, as I understand it, does not belong to the city. It is property of the beach club, and they have an agreement to convey access to the beach across their property at the bridge. But in return for that, they've said we want the city to enforce no parking on that street. Is that your understanding of it?
You know, Josh, I don't have an understanding about that at all. It could well be.
Okay.
We have the scheme of public and private roads in this town is wicked complicated, and I just don't know enough about Nautilus
okay.
Road to.
All right. Very well. Well, thank you for being a guest, and good luck in your campaign.
Thank you for calling, Josh. I appreciate it.
Okay,
good luck to you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. One of the ways to judge a company is in its staying power. At Moynihan Lumber, we've been doing our thing now for 55 years. Serving all of Greater Boston, Moynihan Lumber offers lumber and building materials, doors and windows, decking, kitchen cabinets, and Ace Hardware. Visit Moynihan Lumber at any of our three locations, in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Gloria Food Store is still Beverly's number one deli, and no matter what New England weather is thrown at us, Gloria is open. With fresh bread delivered from Sunray Bakery every morning, Gloria can provide party platters, calzones, hot trays, cold trays, salad trays, and finger sandwiches for whatever you have planned. Call in your order at 978-922-3613, stop in at 268 Rantoul Street, or visit GloriaFoodStore.com.
We're back with Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is candidate for mayor in Beverly, David Manzi. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Josh.
Tell us about yourself, family, education, background, and why you're seeking office at this time.
Well, simply put, in April of this year, I took out papers to run for mayor. this time it became quite evident to me the taxpayers of Beverly were being ripped off and led down a path of financial disaster. Less than 5 years ago, Beverly bonded over $30 million for a new high school. Now Mike Cahill's middle school project, Beverly, will bond almost two times the amount at $60.8 million, which amounts to over $114 million with interest on the backs of Beverly taxpayers. That pretty much puts it in a nutshell what drove me to challenge the mayor of Beverly, because I saw no other elected officials rising up to protect Beverly taxpayers.
Okay.
Let me give you a little bit of background about myself. I've been on the Beverly School Committee for the last 10 years. I'm in my 10th year on the Beverly School Committee. I have 20 years of corporate management experience. I was 10 years in the financial industry. I've been a licensed teacher since 1975. I'm a former dean of students at Pope John High School. And from 1998 to 2005, I was on Bishop Fenwick's advisory board and trustees. So, you know, I have a very diverse work background, and I think I have a lot that I can offer the city of Beverly to try to protect the Beverly taxpayers.
What is your view of the proposed renovations of the bleachers at Hurd Stadium? Will those repairs be sufficient, or would your solution as mayor be something different, and what would that plan include?
Well, I believe our Mayor Cahill wanted to move the stadium to the Beverly High School campus, but in the end, he realized that it was a project the city couldn't afford, because I believe that if he had the opportunity to do that, I've always been a proponent of keeping Hurd Stadium, the football stadium at Hurd. I've always been a proponent for putting the home side on the visitor's side, which is the sunny side of the field. For decades, Beverly fans have frozen on that home side, particularly come Thanksgiving Day. The proposal right now is to the city is going to allocate about $700,000 to put stands on the visitor's side, which will become the home side. The home side will just be basically a grassy knoll for the time being. My only question about where this plan is, because I do support, as I said, you know, putting the home side on the sunny side of the field, which makes all the sense in the world. I believe it should have been changed years ago. But on the home side that currently has existed, you know, for decades, that'll be a grassy knoll. I believe at some point in time there probably will be some form of stadium seating put over there for bleachers. I question whether the amount of bleachers that they're putting now on the sunny side will be sufficient, particularly, you know, once we get to our Thanksgiving Day game, which in the past, I mean, has drawn as much of 8,000, 10,000 people down there. So that'll surely be inadequate for that type of game.
Some people believe that in democratically elected mayoral form of government creates a sense of institutional checks and balances between the chief executive mayor and the legislative city council. Do you view those roles in that manner, and how would you evaluate the Beverly City Council in terms of being either over or under supportive of the incumbent mayor's proposals and positions?
Well, I believe basically right now the city council is a joke in general. Whatever the mayors in the recent past have put in front of them, they've just rubber stamped. So, whether they were actually functioning, I don't think would have changed a thing. So, I think the city council for quite some time in Beverly has pretty much, marched in lockstep with the mayor, whether it was prior Mayor Scanlon, surely with Mayor Cahill. And I'll give you a couple examples. This middle school project, I mean, it's outrageous. This started at $33 million by Mayor Scanlon just 4 years ago. 4 years ago. This project, all right, right now, when you include the interest on the $60.8 million bond, the Beverly taxpayers will be paying over $114 million. That's the Beverly taxpayers' portion of this bill, over $114 million. You know, this city...
How much does the state then reimburse that, or is that just the city's share?
That's the city's share. Basically, it comes down to this, all right? This project was presented to the Middle School Building Committee back in February at $123 million, all right? They whittled the project down to approximately, when you take out the initial study cost, which is about $1.5 million, that was paid out by the city of Beverly already on this, all right, that came directly out of taxpayers' pocket. The portion that's being shared between the city and the state is about $109 million. So here we have a project, all right, that $109 million, Mayor Scanlon presented this, that the city was going to pay, the city was going to only pay about 40% of this project, and the state was going to pick up 60% of the tab. That's documented in an interview that he did with us back in 2011. So it was supposed to be 60% the state, 40% the city. This has ended up with the city right now bonding $60.8 million, all right? That role has pretty much been reversed. And basically, it's because Mayor Cahill has failed to manage the design phase efficiently on this project. So to have a reversal in regards to, you know, the portion that the state and the city is going to pay is outrageous. For the city council just to rubber stamp this and claim it is a fabulous project is ridiculous.
What, in terms of long-term infrastructure issues like water and sewer, roads, public works, facilities upgrades, renovations, how would you evaluate, what letter grade would you give the Beverly for their performance, say, over the last 5 years in dealing with those issues?
Probably an F. No different than Salem and Peabody from what I see with the roads here on the North Shore. There's no attention to detail whatsoever. When you start driving down some of these side streets, it's ridiculous. Now, Beverly has a bunch of big projects that are going to start taking place, like Route 1A going down, all right, Cabot Street. That project has been in the works for 20 years, all right? And that's all state-funded, all right? So we have work being done on Brimble Avenue as well, which is state-funded. But when you look at what the city's responsibility is, which is basic maintaining of the streets and side streets, all right, it's a disgrace. I grew up in this city. This city has never looked like this. If you're driving down a side street in this city, if you're not watching where you're going, you could easily put $1,000 of damage on your car in a drop of a hat.
All right. What if you were to look at the mayors who have served in Beverly for the last 25 years, which two do you think did the best job, and what did they do that impressed you?
Well, you know, I guess we really don't have much of a choice because Mayor Scanlon was in office for 18 years over a 20-year period. So when you're looking at mayors, all right, over the last 25 years, you know, you're looking at Mayor Monahan, who was in office for 10 years, Mayor Crean, one term or 2 years, Scanlon, 18 years, and Cahill is in his first term. So it's really, really hard to say.
Okay.
I mean, Mayor Scanlon, obviously, the remodeling of the elementary schools, you know, was something that was needed, and the city had to pay for it dearly. Because of the things that were done there, many other things were neglected, and that's reflective in the city streets of Beverly. I mean, these city streets, you know, for over two decades have been ignored, and it's pretty reflective there. One of the probably the biggest accomplishment during this period of time, obviously, was the encouragement of the Cummings Center to develop that eyesore of the former United Shoe factory. So that has probably been one of the greatest accomplishments that are there. So that did take place during the Scanlon administration, so that can't be ignored.
Good. Well, given the students who attend the regional vocational school have a cost per pupil of $23,500, and students who attend Beverly High pay the cost per student is $15,000 and up, Given that disparity, what can be done by city councils, be it Beverly, Gloucester, Salem, to rein in the cost of vocational education, or should it be reined in? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, obviously, things like that need to be looked at. What goes on, all right, at the vocational school needs to be looked at closely. The hiring of former school superintendent of Beverly, Mr. Lupini, who's currently in Brookline and be leaving there to go there, what they're offering for him in pay is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it's basically $190,000 a year with a bunch of perks that'll take him over $200,000 a year. You know, to supervise
a high school,
to supervise that high school as a superintendent, it makes absolutely no sense at that type of rate of pay. And then we're going to pay a principal and all the other administrators there.
One of the problems, as I understood it, was when they did the merger, the state said everybody who has a job at either place gets to keep their job. So you have, you know, not like mergers and acquisitions in business and industry where there's a consolidation of where their tasks are duplicated. Everybody gets, so you have layers and layers of administration there. But there's no rhyme or reason for why that is, other than that's what the legislator wanted to do. So that cost gets then put back on the local taxpayers who have to foot the bill for that.
Right. Well, the part of it is the bill is so high right now because of all the debt service that's been added with the building of that new school there. So that's why, you know, your cost per pupil is so outrageous right now, is because that was an expensive school to build. I mean, it was ridiculously expensive.
Okay.
To build. That was in excess of $100 million at the time it was being built. You can't help question, you know, some of the decisions that were being made in the building of that school. And I think what happens sometimes, the mayors in the city council, they're at arm's length on these projects, and there's really no scrutiny to this stuff. And there's way more money being spent than is necessary. And the perfect example is what is being offered to Dr. Lupini coming in there and taking over as superintendent. I think that's pretty reflective of most of the things that go on. Things just aren't scrutinized and gone over with fine-tooth comb.
Does tourism and industry in Beverly need to grow? And if so, how is that achieved and balanced against issues of traffic in Beverly?
Well, as far as that goes, tourists, I believe that Beverly's our harbor area, it's basically been a waste for decades down there. My proposal would be to try to get an investment group together to build a model of the hangar to place at Beverly Harbor, okay? The former McDonald's building down there needs to be revamped. The city needs to take the bull by the horns on that thing, put some type of architectural, either knock the building down or put some type of architectural design on it that fits with the harbor area in a New England motif, and sublet it out to some small shops, whether it be sandwich shops, ice cream shops, boat rentals. There needs to be restrooms, facilities, but that needs to be open as public parkland down there. And we need to get access to the waterfront. So my view on how to promote tourists in Beverly is Beverly could be a fabulous tourist destination. So, you know, Beverly Harbor area could be no different than Plymouth with the hangar down there, a replica of the hangar, no different than Plymouth, Massachusetts, that, you know, that has the Mayflower too. We need to open up walking paths that could be very similar to Ogunquit, Maine. And we have the availability to create tours of some of the mansions that exist at Beverly Farms, no different than Newport, Rhode Island. Beverly could be all of those things in one. In regards to traffic, I don't foresee any of that adding traffic to the point would be a problem, but Beverly has some serious traffic issues, particularly in North Beverly. And, you know, that has just gotten worse over the last decade or so as the Cummings Center has continued to grow and the Cherry Hill Industrial Park has grown. And so as those particular areas have expanded, North Beverly traffic along that Dodge Street corridor is a big, big problem. Cars can't even get off of Route 128. Beverly needs to get the state involved, all right? We need to come up with some solutions, whether it's additional ramps that take people off of 128 into other areas of North Beverly other than directing them directly onto Route 1A. And that, I believe, is should be a priority and would be a priority in my administration.
Well, how has social media impacted local campaigns, and in what ways, if any, have you used social media as a campaign tactic or strategy, and how important is it in social media in terms of getting one's message across to the public?
It's hard to say, you know, because I think with social media, there's somewhat of a generation gap on some of the social media regarding Facebook. I am on Facebook with my campaign. I do have a great website on the Internet, but in regards to how that will impact a local mayoral election, I really don't know what the answer to that is, but I am using it. How impactful it will be is questionable.
Well, thank you for being a guest on the Rotary Radio Hour, and we wish you the best in your upcoming campaign.
Thanks, Josh. It was my pleasure.
Thanks, Dave.
Hi, this is Jeff Klickstein, General Manager at Moore GMC in Danvers. Did you know that we're a family-owned and operated dealer that's been serving the North Shore since 1969? When you come to see us, you're treated like part of our family. GMC has a great lineup with Sierra pickups, the ever-popular Acadia, and the redesigned 2016 Terrain. Our service department ranks as one of the best in customer satisfaction because we respect our customers' busy schedule, and we do repairs as quickly as possible with the least amount of inconvenience to you. There is clearly a difference, not only in selecting the right vehicle for your needs, but selecting the right dealership to buy it from. We are the dealer that will provide you with the best buying experience possible. We are conveniently located off Route 128 at Exit 23, 80 High Street in Danvers. I personally invite all of you to come in, come visit us, see why our customers keep coming back for all their automotive needs.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. One of the ways to judge a company is in its staying power. At Moynihan Lumber, we've been doing our thing now for 55 years. Serving all of Greater Boston, Moynihan Lumber offers lumber and building materials, doors and windows, decking, kitchen cabinets, and Ace Hardware. Visit Moynihan Lumber at any of our three locations, in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Madruga for full-service estate planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trust, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Madruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883.
Hello, sports fans. This is Wally, the voice of Honeydew Donuts. All right, you're getting ready to go to a game. I don't care if it's morning, afternoon, or night. Don't forget, stop into Honeydew Donuts and get yourself a cup of coffee. How about that large iced coffee? That Mocha Madness one is unbelievable. You'll think you went to Honeydew Heaven. So remember, you heard it here first on MSONewsSports.com. And remember the name, it's Honeydew Donuts, the only way to go.
People come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street, a great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite, eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Sylvan Street Grill has a great new game time menu featuring delicious new dishes, specials, and all-time favorites, too.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Bradford Tavern, the Rowley destination restaurant, featuring many modern touches, nestled in a rustic setting, offering the finest steaks, seafood, and many quality daily specials. The Bradford Tavern is open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to midnight, serving lunch and dinner. See you soon at the Bradford Tavern in Rowley, 89 Haverhill Street, Route 133. And check us out at bradfordtavern.com.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Maria Carrasco, who is a candidate for school committee in Lynn. Maria, thank you for being a guest and welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and it's a privilege for me to be there this morning.
Tell us about yourself, your family, background, and why you're seeking elective office.
Well, I came from Dominican Republic a very long time ago, in the early 1980s. I have three children. They're all graduating from public schools in Lynn. And I have six grandchildren. Back in Dominican Republic, I have my bachelor's degree in education, but I was not able to pursue my career over here due to the lack of English. So, like many other immigrants, I was working at shoe manufacturing. Then I went to North Shore Community College, where I had a social degree, and started working in the community for helping people to become American citizens and doing different things that we're doing. We need to work.
Great. What do you think are the most important issues facing Lynn with regard to schools in this election?
We have in Lynn, we're doing good, but we should do it much better. We have classroom with too many students in one classroom. You see some places in Lynn that one school has in third grade 23 students, but you go to another side of the city where the third grade teacher has 30 students and 28. I believe that is not right. I believe that we need to invest more money and resources to direct services, meaning for our students and our teachers. We see this in Lynn very often, and that is not right for the teachers, it's not right for the students, and it's not right for the parents. I also see in Lynn that we have many old buildings. Sometimes it costs more to repair than to build a new school.
You're absolutely right. I know that the cost of renovation or taking an old building and bringing it up to date is usually more expensive than it is to get to start from new. And then the reason is you don't know. I mean, any building that was built prior to 1966. Mm-hmm. They're going to assume that the tile on the floor has an asbestic background adhesive that was adhered when it was adhered to. You're going to run into asbestos on the pipes. All of those are abatement projects which drive up the cost. So you're absolutely right. There are so many hidden costs in renovation.
Mm-hmm. And I also believe that the resources, they are no in some way, the way that administration distribute the resources are not right, because we have students in the inner city where many poor or low income population are serving, that teachers need to provide even the supplies for the students. I see teachers with their own money helping the students to get the supplies that they need. So that is something that we see in our school system, but and I don't believe our students who are more low income should be deprived to receive the resources that other students are receiving.
Well, here you have in Lynn a situation you've described that's not unlike what I hear in other communities, where the teachers have to go out and buy supplies because the district doesn't have the money or it's being spent somewhere else.
That happens in Lynn also. Teachers need to go for their own money and buy supplies. That happens in Lynn, yes.
At the regional vocational school, they spend upwards of $23,500 per child.
Mm-hmm.
For students who go there, whereas most of the other high schools on the North Shore are 13, 14, 15,000 per child. Given that disparity, what can city councils or school boards do to interact with the regional vocational schools to bring those costs more in parity with each other?
We have more than 900 students. If you see the classical and English high school, we have over 1,000 students. So if we increase the number of students, the cost of the students is going to be reducing. That is my thought about that. We also have different organizations who want to invest in those students. So if we see different companies who might be able to invest and provide some kind of on-the-job training for those students, could be maybe the cost is going to be reducing. I don't know too much about what the city talks are doing regarding the LinkTech. But I believe that we need to increase the number of students that we have and provide training that is going to be, they're going to be able to get a job, marketable skills. We have the health department over there. When we see a student graduating from high school, LinkTech, and they have a certificate indicating that they are nursing assistant. I believe that nursing assistant should not be the diploma that they got after 4 years in the health field. They should get more skills better than nursing assistant.
Good. Well, how has social media, Facebook, things like that, had an impact on campaign tactics? And to what extent are you using them? And how effective are they in getting a message across?
The social media, you know, most of the time, if you want to use our social media, you have to pay for ad. So if you have the money, you are able to pay, it's okay. You're going to get the information. When I became a school committee in 2007, I was able to be in Lynn Iron almost every week because I had the money for that. And people were helping me. It's getting, many people are able, especially people who are retired. They read the Iron almost every day because that is something that they became adjusted. Other people, they don't do it because we have the technology. We have the internet. We have the radio, as you say. But the radio is part of the social media. And if you talk about the Iron, many, it's a population who always see the Iron. And that population always goes to vote. So it's great to have this population because they know how important it is to go to vote. And so in my case, I had to use the media in different ways because, as you know, I am Latina. So many people don't read the Lynn Iron.
Okay.
Because they don't speak the language. But many people can see the TV, you know, and the local TV. And we have the local TV in both languages around here. So I can, and it's helped me because I go some places and they say to me, I already see you. I already saw the way that you vote because we televise our school committee meeting. We televise the city council meeting. So the media is real. We need to use the media. It plays a very important role for anybody who wants to run for any position in the city. We also have the radio. In my case, I have many different radio stations that I can reach in English and Spanish. so they can promote it and we can motivate them to go out to vote, and they also can promote it while it's going on in our school system.
Okay. What? How supportive has the incumbent mayor been to the Lynn schools, and are there ways you would have her be more supportive? If so, can you give some examples?
Well, the, if you know, the mayor never attended our subcommittee meeting that we have. So many times we have subcommittee, and the mayor doesn't know what's going on when he get in the regular meeting that is at 7 o'clock. Just last month, he attended for the first time one of our subcommittee. I don't know what's going on in her mind, but that is telling you that it's not too much support in case that in regarding our meeting. But one more thing is that our school is not 100% funded by the city, so that means that we don't, our budget is not as supposed to be in the city side. It's only not even 95% funded by the city side. So when we talk about education, I don't want to say that we have to compromise. Education is education, and if it's not 100% funded, to me, she's not supporting education at all.
Okay. The infrastructure of Lynn School, you touched on this earlier, so it may be a little bit redundant, but Lynn School infrastructure, the buildings, renovations, facilities need to be maintained at appropriate level. Are they being maintained at an appropriate level to your liking, or should there be a bond issue issued or something to bring the facilities and the infrastructure up to date?
Okay, I'm going to tell you something. I have my little house. If in one step is broken, I try to fix it right away before I get something out affecting. So I mean, by saying that, I want to tell you that I, in my opinion, our buildings have been neglected in the past, and they've been leaving stuff without pay attention. We have a school in Lynn, crazy school, crazy. It's a school that when I became a school committee, I couldn't understand in 2007 that I went there. And I found out that the roof, all the little, how you call it, brick is coming down, and instead fix the roof, they put a little fence around where the area where I'm supposed to get the roof going down, and they put a little fence so the big cannot hit the students when they are outside. Does that mean that they pay attention to the roof? No. They did something to avoid the bricket when it fell down to hit the students, but they didn't fix the roof. That means that our buildings, they're being neglected from the past, and still we see a lot of buildings in that situation. We have another school, Harvard School, where we have more than 500 students, 587 students. And this place, in the past, we tried. And when I say we tried, I mean I'm talking about me involving another organization in that city to see how can we fix the building. And we contact that trade in Boston, and they say that building was more expensive to fix than having another building, and it's in bad condition that they didn't even believe that was able to have people inside. But still, we have a student there. We have over there classroom and bathroom with only one toilet and with a window. And that is what we have in our school system in Lynn. They are so in bad condition. The only hope that I have is that we do have a window, because we know that Marsha is going to be ready for next year, and we have picketing on the line. They're going to, it's already agreement that Pekin is going to be the next school, and hopefully we're going to have Tracy or maybe another school, because we really need more schools, and also we need to deal with Massachusetts school building to see if they can allow us to have more students in our schools that we try to build, like a Pekin, if we can have at least more than 1,200 students, would be great, because we need a school that, you know, that we are mandated from not to have more than 800 students or not to have more than 900 students. So but this in Lynn, we need more. And we need buildings that can hold more students, so we can create more classrooms and give hire more teachers.
Okay. What are you satisfied with the overall curriculum plan for the Lynn Public Schools, and do you think the initiative by Governor Baker to gradually increase the number of charter schools in the Commonwealth will help or hinder schools like the Lynn Public School System?
You know, I'm never going to agree with privatizing our education. It takes away a lot of employees' rights. Besides, at the end, it's going to hurt the low-income people. So I believe that public school is mandated to take students every day. Lynn is a city that has many, many immigrants. And every week, we see more families coming to Lynn, and we need to provide education to that family, regardless where they're coming from. They might come from places where they don't speak the language, and we need to take it. So I agree with the curriculum. I don't agree with the tests, that we have too many tests. We have too many. Right now, teachers are preparing our students to pass a test. I agree that our school, we have excellent teachers in our school system in Lynn. I don't agree. We privatize our education, so that means that I don't agree with charter school, because the way that we take kids every day, we cannot compare. We take kids every day. Charter school has one enrollment day, which is different, you know. And besides, the data indicated that we're doing much, much better in our school system.
Great. Just a minute or so left. What steps are you satisfied with the safety of children attending the Lynn schools, or should the city or state be doing more to ensure the safety of children going to, during, and engaged in after school activities?
We have a very, I think that we do good with our safety of our children, which is first. We have in our school, Kara, and we have a very strong policy against bullying. We have monitors who are checking everything that is going on in our school. And so far, we are doing, we have the sheriff department coming to Lynn sometimes to check it to see how we're doing, and they come in and nobody knows that they are here. So far, we've been doing good. We have, when somebody go to the school, they need to identify who they are. Even me, I went yesterday to the school, I had to leave my car key to the front door. So, as a school committee, I had to do that. So everybody had to do it. If you don't have a car, you have to leave identification. So, I believe regarding inside the school, we're doing good. And you know, this world is moving so far that whatever we're doing right now, we might need to continue improving. And outside, it's the same. If somebody in the same school has some problem outside, so the same discipline is going to be implement for those individuals, even if the issue is from outside.
Great.
So I think that we're doing good. Can be better, yes, but sometimes we don't have the resources. We do whatever we can do. We have police officers just right there in the school, so they can see, not to penalize the students, but to see what the student needs more, more interaction with the police, or who they might know. They become a friend. And the police officers already know who needs more attention, who is the person that they can leave alone because they know what to do, and how can they become a friend and bring the kids to the right direction. So we do many, many things in Lynn that so far we have no neglect for any situation.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and wish you the very best in your efforts in the upcoming campaign.
I want to say thank you to you because you do a great job as sports-wise goal in our city, and thank you to the audience. I really appreciate you that you made me be part of this radio scripture station, whatever. I just feel happy that you took your time, and what you do is excellent. Thank
Great.
You so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
People come and take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Sylvan Street Grill has a great new game time menu featuring delicious new dishes, specials, and all-time favorites, too.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Bradford Tavern, the Rowley Destination Restaurant, featuring many modern touches, nestled in a rustic setting, offering the finest steaks, seafood, and many quality daily specials. The Bradford Tavern is open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to midnight, serving lunch and dinner. See you soon at the Bradford Tavern in Rowley, 89 Haverhill Street, Route 133. And check us out at bradfordtavern.com.
Why are you voting for Paul McGeary?
I'm voting for Paul McGeary for mayor because he does his homework and he gets things done.
He's been my city councilor and is always helpful.
He fights for our schools.
Paul helps us support sobriety and combat substance abuse.
He listens.
He'll bring good jobs to Gloucester.
I trust Paul.
I'm Paul McGeary. I'm asking for your vote for mayor on November 3rd, and I approve this message.
Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Madruga for full-service estate planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trusts, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Madruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and our guest is the mayor of Gloucester, Safathia Romeo Taken. Safathia, welcome to our program.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. Good morning, everyone.
Tell us about yourself, your family, your career, your public background. I know you've been appointed in elected positions. Tell us, start everybody off. Tell us a little bit about you.
Gee, you want me to tell you? I wanted to write a book so you'd buy the book.
Yeah, well, there
All
you
right.
go.
Well, you know, I am Gloucester-born. I have three wonderful daughters and four great-grandchildren, born and raised all my life. Inner city kid, grew up in Church Street, Middle Street. We called ourselves the Churchyard Gang, for those who are listening. Welcome to Churchyard Gang, right down the street from the fort. Grew up in the Beaches Pavilion and, you know, the old bird's eye and having a wonderful interaction with everyone in the city, running around, being a free child, which was great, but also learning respect and also learning how to volunteer. We started volunteering at a very young age. My father actually helped produce some of the stuff in the community. Actually was with Common Gorka, one of the first board of directors of the Fisherman's Wives, Fisherman's Loan Fund, actually started the first Meals on Wheels, started Central Grammar, worked with Action on the board, head of the Democratic Party, believe it or not, worked with Senator Kennedy very closely. We had those interactions all our lives. So to us, it's just a normal thing, living in Gloucester. You just belong.
Good. Why are you seeking running for mayor at this time?
Well, you know what? I'm running for mayor. I'm loving the city. I love what we've been doing. I love that in the past 10 months, the team that we have has been thriving. It's like they've been regenerated. They've been renewed spirit of working together. It's just been open and honest, and we've been just doing great work. And it's improving. We did a leadership day, and I kidnapped them. I love kidnapping people, as you know, and we went on this wonderful cruise, so we have innovation to re-spirit ourselves and to learn from each other, and we're doing that. We're now working with the partnership, so we all know what each other's doing. We're now, I want to change it's called the personnel director. I want to make it human resource department. There's some changes that I want to make in city, in-house, so we can bring better out-house, you know what I mean? So we can bring it better to the community. There's grants that I'm working on. I know people saying, what are grants? But you know what? We're innovating Gloucester. We have this group called Innovation Gloucester. We have those working with the fishermen. The fishermen now need someone who knows and lives and breathes the industry, who can sell what we're selling and make sure that that market's there. Because we have to innovate. We have to change it. Things are changing. You know, and when people focus on fishermen, they don't want to change. That's not true. What's happening, let them change. They want to change, and they need to change. But the fact is, you need to help them do that. You need to get them a market for the redfish. You need to get them a market for what's going on. You need to help them survive. You need to make sure that, you know, the things that are happening that are working together, you're working with different groups, not against one group. So, you know, we did that in the beginning of the year. I want to continue that.
How satisfying was it to have a candidate for president, Hillary Clinton, make reference to the Gloucester Police Chief's efforts with the drug issues?
Absolutely, absolutely, and it started in the White House. And absolutely, because we believe in the community. We started change this year. We don't want arrest. We need to intervene. You need intervention, but you also need prevention. And then I'm also working with the Attorney General on programs. Is what happens when they come out? You don't want to keep recycling. We need to work that together. So the chief is working in intervention with the great police department. Then we're working on prevention. You got that with the schools and Gloucester Clover with the Board of Health. And then I want to complete that prevention saying they need some place to go. Because you know what? Most of the ones we have clean have homes, but they need a center, a clean center where you can go in, help with your resume, help with the programs out there, and help. Because I said to the state, I said, look, if we put them on Social Security disability, then you put them on SNAP, then you put them on Medicaid, then you put them, it's going to cost the city and taxpayers $6,000. But if you do a ticket back to work, where you give an incentive to tax incentive to a company to hire them, and then you also help pay for some of their salary, where they'll pay taxes on it, and after 6 months they're on their own, it's not going to cost less than $2,000 to do that versus $6,000. So we have to work together. We have to do that. And I want to bring that forward. I don't want to say, okay, we have a program, leave it, and that's it. Because you know what? All the mayors that I've talked to said, Mayor, it's a great program, but what do we do in between and what do we do after? We still need to continue that.
Do you support...
And you know what? I think it's great that they're all... It's for the first time ever, when this governor said to us, okay, it's an epidemic, it made people feel like a whole, that we're all in this together for the first time ever. How many parents have a child that you either know or a family member, and you're so embarrassed, or you're saying to yourselves, what did I do wrong? For the first time ever, if you remember the picture of me hugging the governor, and it looks like I was kissing his ear, I was saying, thank you, because you made so many families feel like we belong. It's not our fault. For the first time ever, people are saying, thank you. I can now deal with this openly. And that's what we need.
Do you support a proposal to allow parking on Atlantic Road to provide more access to the beaches? And if
absolutely not. Don't even finish.
If it comes before you as a resolution from the council, will you veto it?
I hate the word veto, but I'd have to look at it. I don't think it's going to come for a resolution to do parking for beaches. I think that we're going to work with the back shore residents. I think they're going to work with the hotels. I think it's too dangerous to have parking over there. Okay. And even if you don't allow it, you have to police it. You know what? That's a beautiful sight. The homeowners know that some people will get out of their cars. There's certain areas you can park anyways. Take your pitch and move forward. If we have parking all along there to go to the beach, you ruined everyone's open space. a freedom of looking at something and be able to paint, be able to take a picture, or just breathe. You don't want it lined up with vehicles. You don't want that, because then you just change the whole open space look of a beautiful back shore.
How has the being interim mayor prepared you to deal with some of the problems, situations, and issues you're likely to experience if you're elected over the next 2 years?
Well, I'm telling you, whether you were interim mayor or you're just a citizen, there are a lot of problems that just come up and you have to learn to deal with them. Over the past 18 years, being a healthcare advocate, you know the changes of healthcare. Been there, work with the legislative, work with Congress, work with Senate. We have that gap. But also, working as a city council for 13 years, we've come with so many different crises. One day, you know, you had a huge fire and we don't know what to do and how do you do it. I'm a hands-on mayor. When we had a huge fire, I'm not afraid to go down in my pajamas, start evacuating my seniors, start going with Senator Todd and going to McDonald's to get food, go to open shops. You know what? We just had a crisis, and we had 150 sailors stuck on shore. Did people know that? Did I go around and say to people, guess what? We have a crisis. No, I dealt with it. I opened the senior center, called the custodian, called the police, and I stayed until 3:30 in the morning to make sure they were asleep. Called Domino's, fed them, got them pizza because they didn't want coffee. You know how young kids, you got your leave, you want to have a good time. We had a great weekend, and, you know, we had the schooners. And you had everything going on, and then it was such bad weather that you couldn't even transport them back home. What are you going to do with the 150 sailors on shore? We dealt with it, so that's a small one. How do you deal with something that, like the storm? We dealt with it. How do you deal with the budget? We did it, and you'll be so surprised. Guess what? We have free cash coming. Absolutely. I'm smiling right now. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Because, yes, I am telling you, I have a great team. I couldn't be prouder of my city right now than I am today, because the fact is, we overcome a lot of obstacles. We had a vibrant 700 fishing fleet, and yet we have very few. We've had Noah being our enemy to being our best friends. We've come up, we've come down, we've done that. We're doing an art policy. We had a sculpture that was going to be brought into Gloucester, and I apologize to the sculpture because it's beautiful in people's eyes, but we had no location, so we're going to do an art policy. So you do things first time. I love public input. I love public, you know, I love to talk, so why shouldn't someone else have a chance to talk and I get to listen?
I foresee, too, getting that back on to be a taxable property. Tell us about what's going on there. It's been a, you know, we got the weeds gone, but, you know, and there's some parking there, but it's not really doing much, and it's been that way since before you and I were born. So,
well, you know what? That's right. So it's been there for a long, long time, okay? And thank you for making me so young, but I remember being there with the weeds and everything else. But the fact is, the Shoreside facilities finally started a group. They are going under one. They are speaking as one as a group. They came forward. They came forward to us as city councilors. They came forward to me again as a mayor. And they're saying, give us a chance to bring our proposition to the government. It's possible $7.5 million to fix what we need to do to improve our shoreside facilities, to work on that. And then we can say what we want to do with that. You know what? We've waited 20 years. If finally we're all together as one, then that means we can sell that property as one. Because, you know, so many people, we can bring something forward and then it's litigation for 10, 15, so what good is that? So if we stick together, we do it as one, then we move it as one, then it'll be sold. You don't want to do something against everyone else when they're asking you to wait, because that means I don't listen. And they asked me, and I'm listening. They said, wait before you put the RFP, see what we can do with our water funds. You know, we're looking at the flood zones, we're looking at the pilings, we're looking at this, we're looking at that. Don't you think they should have their voice, because they stuck with this community all these years with all the infrastructures, with all the stuff that was going in the industry and staying around, and finally they have a little bit of push from themselves and together to start a team to go after $7.5 million. Why would I stop that?
Well,
let me listen to them and then we can move forward together as a team so we can actually do something, whether it's a museum or whether they want innovation houses, whether they want a school. Let them come and say, this is what we need to complete our zoning, to complete that. Now, if they say and leave it in DPA, then I'll listen to them. If they say remove it, but if we come as a team player and we come as one, if we do have to remove it, don't you think the government will listen because we're all one?
Sure.
But if I say take it out and you all have half of these shoreside facilities or different organizations saying no, it's going to be the same way for years.
Got to move.
I think this time, this is the city who's moving forward that's going to be able to get accomplishments because we're working together. We did that with the bid. We got most of the money. Why? Because we sat in January, we came into the office, and we decided that, you know what, we're all going to work together, and everyone's going to have a chance to be heard. And we had a group of people, and if it wasn't really for Scott Memhard saying, you know what, Shoreside Facilities is going to go through the city, and we had no idea because no one informed us, but people came forward. We started a committee. We worked on a plan, and then Noah changed their minds again. But the committee still stayed, and we still said this is what we need, and we got the bulk of the money. It's about time that we came first, don't you think? It's about time we take Gloucester back. What I mean when I say take Gloucester back, because the government, NOAA, fishing industry, it's not that the people left Gloucester. It's just that the fact is half the time we have no say because it's the laws that come forward.
Not including yourself, who would you say were the best two mayors we've had over the past 25 years, and what did they do that impressed you the most?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. That's why, and I said the other day, the debate is I want to be the best mayor, is because I've worked from all the way to ALPA to Kirk. I've gotten their best, and I've gotten their worst. You know what? I don't think any mayor was worse or better than the other. It depends what the economy was at the time and what you had at the time. I think some brought a lot of compassion and ideas, and some were not heard. You know, I'm not going to say who was the best and who was the worst, because to me, any mayor that comes forward and runs this city and has an open mind and an open book and open door is a good mayor. Those who shut their doors shut out their lives to the community, and I have no say for it, so I'm not going to comment on that one.
No, that's fine. That's a good answer. A parent sends their child to Gloucester High School. The cost per child is a little over $13,000 per child. Parent in Gloucester sends their child to the regional vocational school. Cost is $23,500 plus. Why the disparity? What steps can a mayor or a city council do to rein in the cost of the vocational school, or should they?
Well, we've been trying that for years, and that's the cost. What we need to do is to see if when we get some of the Chapter 90 money back for our schools is to increase that. The same thing when you school choice out. Sometimes we have to look at that, well, why do they want to go to vocational? Would it be better if we add it on to our school system and make that? But you know what? An education is an education. That child who is going to a vocational school may never attend a college. They're taking that trade. That person will come back into this community and give back. So sometimes we have to say, you know what? We have to bite the bullet. Because the fact is, that is a lot. That's expensive. That's in a lot of people's mind. That's saying you're sending someone to private school and the taxpayers are paying it.
Okay, Steve, so I want to call you in a couple
minutes. I'm not going to put a price on a child's head. I'm sorry. Okay. I really can't do that because the fact is, that may be the only education they get. But yes, they're going to come back. They might fix your car, my car. They might cut your hair. They might do this. They might do that or go on. But the fact is, if that child wants to go to vote because they looked with their teachers, they worked with their guidance counselors to say that's going to be the best fit for that child.
Great.
Sometimes that's a little bit of extra education. That's a little extra cost. None of us like the price. So we can bring it down and times has changed, but we're working on that. But as far as right now, is I am not going to degrade or belittle any kind of price on a child for a school, even if the ones who want a school choice out, I'm not going to sit there and say, well, you know what, your school choice and your child out, that's not fair. I want them to come back and say, well, this is why I'm doing it, because you don't have this, or we're lacking this, or we're lacking that. We need to tell them that we do get great MCAS. We do that. We have to sell our schools. We need a public relations person for our school system. You just do. That's today's world. You need someone to advocate for your schools, because obviously we've been trying. And we still have school choice out. Something's there that we're not selling. Something's there when you have a real estate person saying, you know, Gloucester schools are not good. That's got to stop. We got to say, look what we have.
Okay.
We do have. We have the STEM programs. We're working on STEAM. We're working on arts and culture. We're working on innovation. Look at the programs, the Gloucester Innovation, what it's doing. We're working with the Maritime. We have the arts and the folk dances and the Gloucester Stage Company getting involved in the elementary, our high school team, our sports, our ROTC, the cheerleaders, all of it. We need to sell it.
Okay.
What about the schools? They sell it. Why can't we?
Well,
we're doing something wrong and we're going to fix it.
Well, thank you, and I want to thank you for being a guest. I have to go to our next guest very shortly, so I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and wish you the very best in your upcoming election.
Oh, thank you very much, and thank you, and have a great day, everyone. Have a nice weekend. Don't forget to watch the high school football game.
Enjoy a 30th anniversary screening of the John Hughes classic, The Breakfast Club, at the Lynn Auditorium October 17th. It will be followed by a discussion and a question and answer session with 80s superstar, icon, and novelist Molly Ringwald. In addition, there are just a handful of tickets left to the super VIP after party with Molly. Upcoming shows include the Steve Miller Band, November 5th, The Price is Right, November 6th. You'll have a great time and have a chance to win prizes. For tickets, go to LynnAuditorium.com or call 781-599 show.
Fact is, including the commute, people spend 10 hours a day at work. No wonder they're forced to buy car insurance in 15 minutes. They just don't have time to go meet with someone. Well, Columbia Insurance has an alternative. The insurance professionals at Columbia Insurance Agency will meet with you at your workplace. Even better, we'll go to the registry and bring your plates back to you at work, free of charge. At Columbia Insurance Agency, we come to you, and we really do. Visit ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net and set up an appointment today. That's ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net.
The Porthole Restaurant is a North Shore dining tradition. Enjoy waterfront dining in a casual atmosphere. The Porthole features outstanding quality, quantity, and price. Known for a full variety of menu selections, you must try the award-winning clam chowder, fresh off the boat seafood, lobsters, prime rib, steaks and chops, daily luncheon and dinner specials. They feature spacious and well-appointed function rooms. The Porthole, a great value, a great dining experience. Open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week on the water on the Linway in Lynn.
Since 1897, the Lynn Museum has celebrated the history of one of America's most consequential cities. Recently merged with Lynn Arts, we are working to build a dynamic cultural hub where our past comes to life and new art is created. Now on display, Present Tense, a Lynn Arts exhibit, open through December 19th, showcasing the contemporary work of our Lynn Arts community. The Lynn Museum is located at 590 Washington Street and open Wednesday and Friday 12 to 4, Thursday 12 to 7, Saturday 10 to 3. Find us online at lynnmuseum.org.
Team up with The Daily Item at itemlive.com, your community information connection. The Daily Item features colorful, timely stories highlighting the North Shore. The new look page focuses on people, places, and things. The Item is presenting news in a user-friendly format. Don't miss any local news or reading features on your neighbors. Check out The Item today. It's all new every day. For home delivery, call 781-593-7700 or go to itemlive.com.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Estelle Rand, who is a candidate for Ward 2 City Council in Beverly. Estelle, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, we start out each interview and say to the candidates, tell us about yourself, your family, background, education, career, whatever, and why you're running for office at this time.
Sure. Well, I've been living in Beverly for 12 years now. And actually, we just bought a house, so I've sealed the deal in my ward, which is good. I live with my husband, Jonathan, and I have two children, Miles and Magnolia, who are 10 and 8, and they go to Cove Elementary School. I started off kind of building my community leadership in Beverly with the Beverly Farmers Market, which just wrapped up, our seventh season. And I also was appointed to the Solid Waste Management Committee, as, you know, before I was running for office. So that was kind of how I got my start with leading in our community and being involved with City Hall and our city government.
What do you think of the most important issues facing the city in Beverly this year?
For me, and I think, the beauty of representing the people in Ward 2, which is the downtown, is that I'm really representing the heart of the city, just kind of geographically and the ward that can affect the city, the whole city, the most. So for me, and I think for a lot of people, we're thinking a lot about economic development,
both as it applies to the harbor, our new Beverly Harbor District, the downtown, and how economic development relates to the housing development that's happening and is going to happen on Rantoul Street especially. So that's a really important issue. Actually, it sounds kind of mundane, but parking is a huge issue. Not that we don't have a lot of it, but just in terms of the system that we have right now, it's not as smooth as it could be, both for our residents and for visitors. So, and that ties into economic development and also just quality of life for people in Beverly. Affordable housing is a big issue, and I'm particularly interested in affordable housing that would be live-work space for artists. I think that's going to be a really important thing to avoid improving our quality of life with like the consequence of gentrification. So I think to avoid that, we really need to put things in place like housing for artists. Okay. Because that's what's really giving our city cultural roots right now. So I want to see that grow and at least maintained and not to disappear with, like, you know, economic development and improvements to the city.
Sometimes the needs of a ward conflict with the needs of the city as a whole. Do you have a strategy for dealing with that type of situation?
Yeah. You know, the thing that I've really focused on right as soon as I got elected, I revived the Ward 2 Civic Association. So what that's done for me is it's given me exactly that, a strategy for building consensus, because now my constituents and I both have a tool to communicate that's consistent and appropriate. So what I can do is really build a strong voice in Ward 2 because I have the civic association to work with. So if there's a tension building of maybe a city need that the ward is not in support of, I mean, my goal is to come to a compromise, really, because I think that does happen, and we've seen it happen already with things like Brimble Ave. And I think my approach is really to build a strong voice for Ward 2 constituents before that emergency situation arises.
Okay.
Right? So we already have a presence and have a collective vision that we can put out there, so that if there is a moment where we need to think quickly and say, here's why we would like to see maybe less density here and more commercial instead of full housing, we want commercial and housing. We're ready for that. So I think that's going to help with coming to a compromise and, you know, just keep the practice of building consensus on the council and with the mayor's office is huge. So I think, you know, my first term I was successful at that with establishing the Human Rights Committee, which just passed this month in the council with the mayor's support. So that's my approach, and I'm sure it will be challenged at some point this term. And I look forward to it, really.
Some people believe that in a democratically elected mayoral form of government creates a sense of institutional checks and balances between the chief executive mayor and the legislative end of the city council. Do you view those roles in that manner, and how would you evaluate the Beverly City Council in terms of being either over-supportive or under-supportive of the incumbent mayor's proposals and positions?
I do view us as having a check and balance. I really very much believe that I work for the people in Beverly. I don't work for the mayor's office. I represent people. So my job is not necessarily to, you know, just agree with everything that's coming out of City Hall, but to really listen to the people. So that in itself, the nature of my job as an elected official to represent people, is a check and balance.
Good.
So I think we've been really lucky this term. I think Mayor Cahill is putting together, you know, taking good steps towards his vision for Beverly, and so far there's been a lot of public process that makes it easy to ask questions, and in the end you come to a point of agreement because you've gotten all this input from the public and talked a lot about the changes that are going to happen. I think that makes it easier to agree. What I think is really important to maintain the checks and balance within, for as a city councilor, is for me to have a very clear vision and clear goals for my constituents in Beverly, and to take steps to achieve those goals.
How has social media impacted local campaigns, and in what ways have you used social media as a campaign tactic or strategy, and how does that help getting either as a listening post to what is happening in your constituency, or in terms of getting the message out to the public?
I use it every day, all the time. I haven't used it as much for campaigning as an incumbent this year. I'm unopposed, and I haven't had to push kind of the campaign messaging as much, mostly because I'm actively working to, you know, actively representing people and resolving constituent concerns. So that's even better than campaigning. Social media, you know, there are so many people that use it as a means of communication that as city councilor I have to use it. And what I've found is really helpful is when people feel well represented and they have an issue, they, for example, will tag me on a Facebook feed. And then I'm instantly involved with the concern. So it's a great means of communication. I think, you know, social media has not replaced other forms of communication. It's still very important to be accessible by phone, in person, via mail. You know, people get in touch with me in all kinds of ways, and it's important that I have those lines of communication open.
What's your view of the proposed renovations of the bleachers at Hurd Stadium?
I haven't looked at the economics of the proposal that much to make a firm opinion on it. I'm glad that there's a solution right now so that the kids are able to play and people can watch, and it's important that we call on our community partners to help us through moments like that where, you know, otherwise, you know, it would be somewhat of a disastrous football season.
Sure.
So, you know, that's kind of a new project for me that I haven't completely looked into.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and we wish you the very best in your reelection efforts.
Thank you. Yes, and you can check me out on Facebook, Instagram, website, all of the above, and please, anyone is free to call and ask me questions and follow up with any of the things that I commented on today.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank
you.
Okay.
Take care.
Gloria Food Store is still Beverly's number one deli, and no matter what New England weather is thrown at us, Gloria is open. With fresh bread delivered from Sunray Bakery every morning, Gloria can provide party platters, calzones, hot trays, cold trays, salad trays, and finger sandwiches for whatever you have planned. Call in your order at 978-922-3613, stop in at 268 Rantoul Street, or visit GloriaFoodStore.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Klickstein, General Manager at Moore GMC in Danvers. Did you know that we're a family-owned and operated dealer that's been serving the North Shore since 1969? When you come to see us, you're treated like part of our family. GMC has a great lineup with Sierra pickups, the ever-popular Acadia, and the redesigned 2016 Terrain. We are the dealer that will provide you with the best buying experience possible. We are conveniently located off Route 128 at Exit 23, 80 High Street in Danvers. I personally invite all of you to come in, come visit us, see why our customers keep coming back for all their automotive needs.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is a candidate for school committee in Peabody, Brandy Carpenter. Brandy, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us, we asked each candidate starting out, tell us a little bit about yourself, family, education, background, and why you're seeking election at this time.
Sure. I'm up for re-election. I've been on the board for 8 years. I have a degree in early childhood education. And I am currently a director of a preschool in Salem. I have three children who are all in the Peabody Public Schools. I have one child at each level. I have my daughter Jonalyn at the high school, my son Brady at the middle school, and my son Colton at the Burke Elementary School. And my husband is a police sergeant. And currently I am the vice chair of the school committee. I am on the finance and negotiations team, quality and standards. I've also been on the parent advisory board. And I'm seeking re-election because the past 8 years, you know, I've enjoyed working. I've enjoyed, you know, being part of a team and moving the district forward. And the re-election part of it to remain is I've kind of entered a whole new realm of things that I can approach in a different view because now I have a child who's at the high school. So, you know, this is something I've never experienced before. And I feel that every decision I make, you know, I'm impacted, my family's impacted, I know how it's going to feel. And now even more so with a child at each level.
Share with us a little about your advocacy on projects like the Higgins Middle School project, the Academy, the Peabody Learning Academy at the North Shore Mall, and CopSync.
Sure. Well, I'll start with the Peabody Learning Academy. That was one of, along with the Higgins, one of the first projects that I got to become part of in the very beginning stages and made the vote to move them forward. And the Peabody Learning Academy is, it's so unique where it helps at-risk students who, you know, can't be in the regular population of Peabody Veterans Memorial High School. It's located in the North Shore Mall. We have, you can't take more than 30, you know, it's a small class size. I think each class is limited to like 15 students. And they kind of, you know, help kids who just can't be in the same type of academic surroundings in that larger type of building. And it's really, really helped with our student dropout rate. The Higgins Middle School project as well was something that was just, you know, starting to be talked about when I first got on the board 8 years ago, and you know I was behind it fully, backed it, very excited. We had gone through many different phases of exactly what we were going to do. You know, we talked about renovation. We talked about putting the building, a new building, where the existing building is. You know, we had to figure out could we move students, and then ultimately we decided that we were going to build a new building on the fields, and then demolish the current building. And that project is going wonderful. It's on time, on budget. I've been able to tour it. It looks beautiful. The students there are all going to have one-on-one devices. It's going to be state-of-the-art. You know, it's just going to be tremendous. And the other thing you asked me about, the CopSync, that is something new just this year, starting up this September. It is an emergency response system for real-time threats that will connect the staff in the building with the closest officers in the area. And each staff member has immediate access to notify the closest police personnel of what's happening, where they're located. They get an immediate map of that building. They can notify the other classrooms. So
so you can pinpoint if you have an intruder or you have an emergency, that police officer is not walking in blind. They know exactly where to go. They may be able to evacuate certain parts of the building because they've narrowed down, you know, where the intrusion is or where the emergency is. And it's going to be tremendous in this day and age with the safety concerns that we have. It, you know, a matter of seconds can save so many lives. So this is something new. Peabody was on board, you know, from the very beginning. We were one of the first school districts in Massachusetts to sign up with this. And, you know, it's just in the beginning stages now.
And it's a grant-funded project, did I understand?
What's that?
Is grant money is funding this, or?
Yes, we have grant money. It's even better through our police department. So this is at a no cost right now for the taxpayers, you know, grant money cost. But, yep, it's a wonderful, wonderful project.
So you're a teacher in a school, and there's a young person walking on school grounds, and they have a shotgun. What happens?
So the staff member who can see that teacher can now log in through their computer, their phone, whatever means is in their classroom at the time. They can immediately set off an alert. It goes to whatever police officers are closest in the area. You could have a police officer work in a detail down the street. He happens to be the closest guy in the area. He's going to be able to get there first. He's also now going to know exactly where that came from, and that teacher can chat in real time if she's able to and give descriptions, tell him things, and they know exactly where it's coming from. So these are things that you're not able to do, you know, in what we have for classrooms now. You know, they're not able to get that information. You have them walking in blindly. This way, they already know what's going on. The teacher can start to tell them, you know, the person's in a red shirt, the person has a shotgun, you know, we're secure, you know, anything that they need to know, she'll be able to relay that information.
Governor Baker is seeking approval from the legislature in Mass to gradually increase the number of charter schools in the Commonwealth. Do you support increasing the number of charter schools, and how is that likely to impact schools in Peabody?
Yeah, you know, I'm not in favor of increasing the charter schools. I think that Governor Baker needs to focus more on funding our current public schools. You know, he talks about increasing the amount, not having kids on waiting lists, you know, that they're very successful. They're not held to the same standards as our public schools. This is something that we need to take care of the kids that we currently have in our system. If we're driving them out and we're going to fund the other schools, then obviously we need to take care of the schools that we currently have. You know, it drains resources from us. We're not funded enough as it is, and now you want to take more money away and give, you know, you're scrapping the whole system and starting new. Our system is good. You just need to take care of it. You need to maintain it. We don't need to start over.
A student attending Peabody High School, per pupil cost is somewhere between $13,000 and $16,000 per child. Student attending the regional vocational school in Middleton, Danvers, is the cost is $23,500 and up per child. What can a school board or city council do to try to rein in the cost of the regional, offset that disparity? When they passed the Education Reform Act of 1993, it was supposed to be an even playing field for everybody. Should the cost of education be that much higher? Should it be more like a private school because of the nature of the curriculum that they're doing? Or should it be equal?
Well, I think, you know, on average, the cost per pupil is around $12,000 to $13,000. It looks like most of the vocational schools are in the area of like $20,000, $19,000. Minuteman is $26,000. That's pretty high. A vocational, regional technical school definitely offers a totally different, you know, experience. And the advantages of attending one of these schools are so great. You know, if your kid gets to go to one of these schools, they're looking at a job right off the bat as soon as they graduate. I mean, that's a great opportunity. So in one aspect, yes, you know, their cost per pupil should be higher than the regular high school cost per pupil. They're offering much more services, you know, things that later on will benefit your society and your city as you're educating these students to be productive working class members. So I think it's a great opportunity to attend a vocational school. But in that aspect, you know, the $23,000 cost per pupil right now that Essex Tech has, I think is a little bit much, especially in comparison to Peabody's. I think it should be a little bit more, but not that much more. Okay. And the steps that we're taking right now, we've just appointed a really great representative, Jim Liakas. He used to be a Peabody school committee member. He was also a city council member. He's on the board right now and represents Peabody for Essex Tech. And, you know, he's already trying to put cost-saving measures in place. The recent hire of their superintendent, you know, he voted no for that salary. It's a pretty big salary. Although, you know, you have a job to do. It's a big school. It's not as big as Peabody. So we have a lot of confidence in Jim to take care of these issues for us. And, you know, he's our voting member, and he's a great person, and he has a lot of experience. So I think, you know, when it comes to the budget, he's going to do right by Peabody.
How has social media impacted local... Well, we've covered that. I'm sorry.
We didn't cover that.
How has social media impacted local campaigns, and what ways, if any, have you used social media as a campaign tactic or strategy, and how does it help either in reaching the constituency or getting a message out to the public?
Well, I think that, you know, social media, Facebook, those things... I didn't have them when I first ran. I think it's probably a great way to get messages out to your friends, but if you're not, you know, paying for it, you're not really reaching an audience that doesn't already know you. You can kind of, I guess if, you know, a candidate doesn't make themselves private or, you know, there's people that can access you, you can go through it that way. You know, still the best type of access to a candidate is, you know, when I first ran, we had forums, we had debates. You know, none of those things happen anymore. You go on Facebook, you can say whatever you want, you can have false information. If somebody corrects you, it kind of turns out to be a, you know, a battleground, and sometimes it gets a little messy, and you can't really interpret people's feelings or, you know, the tone of what the message that you're trying to get out there. So, you know, it might help a little bit. In the grand scheme of things, I can't really say in my experience that it's much more of a boost because, you know, I was elected 8 years ago without it. Okay. So, you know, that's how I feel.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and we wish you the greatest success in your upcoming re-election efforts.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies, and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. One of the ways to judge a company is in its staying power. At Moynihan Lumber, we've been doing our thing now for 55 years. Serving all of Greater Boston, Moynihan Lumber offers lumber and building materials, doors and windows, decking, kitchen cabinets, and Ace Hardware. Visit Moynihan Lumber at any of our three locations, in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Gloria Food Store is still Beverly's number one deli, and no matter what New England weather is thrown at us, Gloria is open. With fresh bread delivered from Sunray Bakery every morning, Gloria can provide party platters, calzones, hot trays, cold trays, salad trays, and finger sandwiches for whatever you have planned. Call in your order at 978-922-3613, stop in at 268 Rantoul Street, or visit GloriaFoodStore.com.
To Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and our guest is Domingo Dominguez from a candidate for City Council at Large in Salem. Domingo, welcome to the program.
Thank you, George. Thank you so much for this great opportunity.
that you are giving me for to communicate to all the audience that listen to this program.
Tell us about your family. We asked out each interview out. Tell us a little bit about yourself, family, background, and so forth, and why you're seeking elective office at this time.
Sure. I have lived in Salem for over 20 years. I am a husband and a father of seven beautiful children. They all attend Salem Public School. And I'm currently the regional sales manager for a company named IDT. I graduated from Lee University with a bachelor's degree in science and business administration. Some of my community involvement include a former teacher for Salem Public School, former vice president of the board of directors of Salem Harbor CDC, and a former board of directors, or member board of directors of the Salem YMCA. I am currently part of the executive board of the South Salem Neighborhood Association, where I live in the neighborhood. And I also president of the Latino Business Association on North Shore. But actually, you know, along with some of the other involvement that I have in the city, giving me a history on the city for many, many years.
What are some of the more significant issues in Salem this year in this election?
Okay, as you well know, I mean, I've been through almost 75% of the whole city door knocking and meeting people and listening to their concerns. This is why I hear that right now one of the main issues is the building of the senior center. Senior center haven't been able to be done, and I think that there's a lot of concern on that. I believe that, you know, the senior need now that we build them a place where they can all get together. I think this is a necessity. That's one of the issues. The other issue that I hear is the traffic. Traffic is still be an issue. As you all know, this is a city that bring a lot of people during this month for Halloween. But throughout the whole year, we're still facing some issue with traffic. The other one that we're facing is parking. We need to implement a new plan on parking and making sure that, you know, we allocate the residents selling on a good way.
Okay. What should Salem be looking to expand its tax base to bring more business and industry, and what are some of the measures being contemplated to do so?
Yes, this is a great question. I think this is one of the concerns that I'd be hearing also with Salem residents. Tax increase is being very concerned. And this is my belief on that. I think that we need to bring more business. When we have more businesses on the city, that will help the residential taxpayers to be more stressed. I think that in a way, we need to attract new businesses, small businesses especially, so we can have alleviate the burden on the tax residents on that regard. I think that we need to bring more commercial and industrial businesses down to Salem.
Okay. If you could change any three things about local government in Salem, what would you change?
That's a great question. So far, I think that Salem has been very progressive, and I think that City Council and Mayor combined have been doing a good job in regard to many issues, but we're still facing some issues that we need to take care of. I believe if I had the chance to change any, and that's what I hear throughout my campaign, the zoning ordinance need to be looked at. I think that we need to double check and making sure that when we have any new development, we really discuss with the residents about any issue regarding to sign. I think we need to look at, I repeat that again, more deeply how we do the zoning, because that's bothered a lot of the residents in the city of Salem. I can mention you that I live in an area where we have Salem State University creating or bringing some new developers. They are increasing the amount of buildings they have on the campuses. That bring a lot of the satisfaction on the residents. And I think that by involving more the resident on the zoning decision that Chile had to make, and making sure that the zoning ordinance be more applicable for the residents, that would be a lot of help.
Okay. Some believe that in a democratically elected mayor or form of government creates a sense of institutional checks and balances between the chief executive mayor and the legislative city council. Do you view the roles in the manner that in that manner, and how would you evaluate the Salem City Council in terms of being either supportive or over-supportive or under-supportive of the mayor's proposals and positions?
Well, it is more of I think that on the side of the city council, because I believe the mayor have an agenda. I mean, we have to understand that the agenda of the mayor is to make sure that the administration progress and the city is looking at the future. I think the city council as a body duty is to check and balance, make sure that they check whatever the mayor or whatever the situation it is at that point. I think if there is a fight between the mayor and the council body, it's going to be a disaster. I think that common sense plays a major role. I think that we need people that understand the concept of progress, but not only that, but also understand the concept of quality of life. And that's why I think the city council body is, that's one of the duties that need to be addressed in all level.
Okay, that's great. If you looked at the people who have served as mayor of Salem over the last 25 years, which two stand out in your mind as having accomplished something of significance, and what is it they did that impressed you?
Me looking back, as I mentioned in the beginning, I have 22 years approximately living in Salem, mm-hmm. been through three different mayors, and I believe that each one of them had done a job in a different capacity. I think that each one of them have a different agenda, different situation, different issue. And I think they all perform well, and I command. I think that they need to be addressed in a different way. But I see that in particular, I remember Stan used to be the previous owner, the previous mayor. He kind of revitalized the downtown area. He just went to one of the buildings in specific that is located in 120 Washington Street that was empty. And he did revitalized our building, and we had to give credit for that. In the same talking, I had to say that he also concentrated on education. He invested a lot on education. But the current mayor right now, she's doing a tremendous job by bringing back some business downtown, giving life to downtown, and bring some new developers and focus on a different group, integrate, make sure that the whole city is very well representing the diversity that we are. Salem is a very progressive, and I have to repeat myself again, saying that each mayor in different times have done the job, and I really, really satisfied with that, and I know with the majority of the residents of Salem will agree with me on this.
How has social media impacted campaigning for you or for in this election, or and how important is it to in getting your message across or just airing issues to your constituents?
Yeah, social media really started changing the game back when Obama ran for president, if you might remind. Campaign was very heavily on social media. The focus on social media is really, is basically, this my point of view, to engage the youth, engage the new voters, new generation. I think that we, at this time, we are seeing more and more involvement on social media for the youth group. And my campaign have focused heavily on Facebook, mentally. We try to post a minimum once a week. We try to post, from a range of Motivation Monday, Throwback, Exit to a Date, and, update what my campaign, Domingo Domingo's campaign is all about. And I think that social media, as I repeat myself, is very important because there's a lot of people now and day involved with social media, and that's why I think it's changing the game of how people do campaign, and we take advantage of that. I want to encourage everybody that listens to the show to get into my Facebook page, which is Domingo Dominguez for Consular Alas, or into my website, with what is domingoatlas.com. And just give it a like and see what we're doing, and that will be very helpful.
Great. I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and we have to cut through. We're just run out of time here, but want to wish you well in your election efforts in Salem.
Thank you so much, Josh, and thank you for everybody who listened to the show and everybody involved in this show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you. Well, that was good.
Take a deep breath.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Terrific, terrific. Got a lot of people on. Let's see. Peabody, Beverly, Salem, Gloucester, not too bad.
And Lynn.
Yeah. And Lynn. Yeah, that's right. Got the whole North Shore covered, so we're getting there. As all the major municipalities having elections, aren't they?
Yeah. All the cities, yeah.
All right. Nice job. Okay, so we'll be back next week, or one of us will be anyway.
I will be in Boston next week, so you have the show, but there'll be four candidates, all from Gloucester next week.
Okay.
I think it's, I know Everett Brown, Steve LeBlanc, and
stay tuned.
And two, Jamie O'Hara and one other.
Okay. All right, don't forget we have football tonight. The big one is Beverly at Danvers being played at Bishop Fenwick High School at 7 p.m. We'll have both video and audio coverage of that one, and it'll be Peabody at Lynn English on Channel B as well. Lots and lots of programming here on MSO with plenty of scores this weekend as well. So step back, take a look at us every now and then on MSONewsSports.com. On behalf of Josh Arnold and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore.
This is MSO Web Radio at morestuffonline.com.